The Gospels, they speak of several different occurrences when Jesus appeared to his disciples. Just a few examples. The Acts of the Apostles begins with the statement that for 40 days after Jesus' crucifixion, from time to time, he appeared to various of the disciples. Those are not detailed in that book, but it's a fact that is sometimes and too often missed. That it wasn't just that Jesus came once, sort of once or twice, kind of proved that it could be done and then just went away. What he really was establishing is he was establishing with his disciples a deep and profound understanding of the power and the potential both of his teachings and of the message that then they were charged to carry out so that what had happened would not be kept only for themselves but would be shared with all. The last act of Jesus before he goes up to Jerusalem on Palm Sunday, which we were talking about last week, at least the last one reported in the Gospel of John, is when he went and brought Lazarus out of the tomb. And it was a humdinger of a last act, that's for sure, because even though he had reputedly raised the dead and had fixed the blindness of people who couldn't see and cured the lame and done any number of miraculous things, there was always room for doubt. Well, were you there? Who did you talk to who saw it? You know how things get exaggerated. And so there was a tremendous interest and energy and a gradually increasing multitude who had absolute faith in Jesus. But this last act of raising Lazarus, as it's described in the gospel, Lazarus becomes sick. Jesus is in another town. His sisters, Mary and Martha, who are deeply devoted to Jesus, send word that their brother is sick. And all three were very dear to Jesus, and he was often with them and close to all of them. They didn't live in the town of Jerusalem, but they lived very nearby. And Jesus gets word that Lazarus is sick, and the other devotees are praying, Lord, come and heal him, because there's no question in their minds of his ability to do so. And Jesus delays. And then after some days have passed, he decides, well, now is the time to go. And by the time he gets there, Lazarus has been dead for 3 days. And not only is Lazarus well dead, he is buried, he's in the tomb, the rock is in front of the tomb, and all the friends of the family, which apparently were quite a few, because they lived close to Jerusalem, are all there and have been there for days before Jesus arrives. So when Jesus finally comes, and this is the point that struck me on this particular reading of the gospel, Martha meets him first, and then Mary, who is sitting in the house, sitting in mourning with her friends near her, Martha comes and whispers, the Lord has come. So Mary rushes out of the house, and others think she's going to the tomb. You know, she's been in a state of grief for days, so they follow her. They don't realize Jesus is there. Now, many traditions say that this Mary is the same Mary Magdalene. And so Mary Magdalene, in her own life, has experienced a great deal of the power of Jesus and its power to resurrect. Resurrect, as Swami defines it, from lower consciousness to higher consciousness. But whatever the basis of her faith, the first thing she says when she sees Jesus is, Lord, if you were here, he wouldn't have died. Now, she's not reprimanding Jesus in saying that. She's just stating what to her is a self-evident fact, which is she knows without a shadow of a doubt in any part of her consciousness that this man is the ruler over heaven and earth, life and death, matter and spirit, and if he had been there, everything could have been different. And then, going on, just to finish that brief story, so then Jesus goes, asks for the rock to be pulled away from the tomb, and simply calls Lazarus's name. Now, in the Bible, they don't do any explanations like this. Interestingly, an autobiography of a yogi, where Yogananda came and brought a woman back to life. Excuse me, it's not an autobiography, it's in The New Path. Swami tells this story. There was a man, and he's only described in the book as a real estate agent, I think in Encinitas. And his wife became ill. He went to Yogananda, or sent word and said, my wife is ill, please come and help her. Come pray by her bedside. Yogananda delayed in going. He didn't feel God telling him to go. Jesus didn't go to Lazarus. He didn't feel God telling him to go. And then Yogananda heard that the woman had died. And then he felt to go. And he went, and the whole house was in mourning, and she was still lying on her deathbed. Yogananda asked that everyone be cleared from the room. And then he sat and prayed over her. And he put a hand on the medulla where the ego is centered, and a hand on the spiritual eye where the spirit is centered. He prayed alone in the room, and she came to life and was healed and lived again, even though she had been declared dead. Now, the point that I wanted to bring out was she described, we don't hear Lazarus' side of this story, wherever he must have told people. Can you imagine that nobody said, tell us about it? But it didn't make it into the gospel, even though we wish it had. But her side of the story did. She said, I was far, far away. Just in the astral world. It's not described, but we've heard it described elsewhere. Nowadays, people talk about it all the time. I was far, far away, and from a great distance, I heard him calling my name. And so I turned back. And then she was outside of her body. She turned back. He was next to her body. He called her back into it. There was no limitation of time or space or distance or material decay or whatever it is. If the soul is present in the body, if divine energy is there, the body is animated. We understand the presence of the divine spirit and the absence of it. We know what life and death looks like. If you've ever been anywhere with someone when they died, there's no question. If you've ever put a pet to sleep, people tell me, because that's when they often see death, you're holding your cat or your dog. The veterinarian gives it the injection. The animal is with you. The animal is gone. Nothing has shifted of what you're holding, but it's an unmistakable reality between life and death. Because whether we know it or not, it's not that we're not able ourselves to animate our bodies, to resurrect our bodies, to create a body. When the sperm and ovum unite, Yogananda says, when the man and woman come together and those first two cells meet like this, the soul, there's a flash of light in the astral world. The soul enters that body, and then we make a body. Nobody can make a body for us. I mean, they've learned now to bring those two cells together outside of the woman's womb, but nonetheless, they have to put it back in, or there has to be the flash of light. They bring those cells together all the time, but they don't necessarily make a body unless a soul is attracted to it. And then we don't know how we do it, and we don't remember doing it, do we? We don't remember sort of saying, well, what next? You know, but we are fully there. And even if the body is growing and the soul departs, then it's declared to be a miscarriage, isn't it? Because the body can't grow anymore. But we're not conscious of being able to do it. But obviously the power is right there within us. We're bound by time, so it takes us 9 months. No, we're not able to make it happen immediately. Well, Lazarus there comes out of the tomb, and everybody sees it. And then after that, Lazarus is just part of the family again. They give a dinner party, and Lazarus is at the table because he's back into life. And it's just happening like this, and everybody saw it. And then they say in the scripture that the priest decided that this was too much, and they really had to get rid of Jesus. And in the Gospel of John, it says, and from that point, Jesus no longer walked openly among people, but he withdrew and went to a village at some distance because he knew that the cycle was beginning to come to an end. And that some of the scriptures also say, the priests say, we're going to have to kill Lazarus too, because as long as he's walking around, nobody's going to forget this guy. But then the crucifixion takes place. We've been through all of that, and it's the first day there. I mean, the first day of the week, the Sabbath is over. So now Mary can act and wants to go prepare the body properly because it was buried hastily. And Mary Magdalene, according to the scriptures, many of the accounts, is the first one to see Jesus. She's the first one to discover that the tomb is empty. She's the first one to see the resurrected Jesus. And there's many, many reasons why that is true. But one of those reasons is described when Lazarus died. Lord, if you had been here, it wouldn't have happened. There is in her this absolute, unquestioning, just total understanding of who this man is. And the primary reason for that, I believe, is because she had experienced it. That he could resurrect his body was to her no more astonishing than the fact that he had resurrected her own life. According to the story, she was a fallen woman. She was a courtesan. Depends on which tradition you read. I don't think she was never a low caste person. She was not an unrefined person. But she lived outside of society in one way or another. She was not following the central norm. She was the way we have to think about this. Yesterday when we were having a discussion about the life of Jesus for some hours in the morning, someone raised the question saying, you know, when very difficult things happen to me, she said, sometimes it actually draws me closer to God than when everything is just going easily and well. So she said, what do you call good karma and what do you call bad karma? And so we were discussing the fact that the human ego has a desire for pleasure and for ease. And if you really think, if we think from an ego point of view, what we think of as good, it's when it's pleasurable to us, and some people like to work hard, but if it's easy and it's pleasurable. If it's not pleasurable, like we're being tortured or we're sick or we're lonely or we're poor or we've lost a job we count on, that we don't call that pleasurable. And if we suddenly lose the conditions that made our life work well, we don't call that easy. And so we attach to that word bad. But the conditions of life are ever changing. And if we're going to make pleasure and ease the condition of good and challenge and struggle the condition of bad, well, we're going to spend a lot of time on the bad side of the ledger. And when this life is over, it's not measured by any of those realities because all those realities vaporize. The body goes away and all the conditions and relationships associated with it are lost in the form that they had. All that we have is our perception of reality. In other words, our consciousness based on the experience we had. Am I powerful? Am I linked to God? Am I loved by the Spirit? Can I resurrect the conditions of my life even as Jesus did again and again and again? You know, am I sad? Am I blissful? Am I lonely? Am I narrow in my understanding? Do I embrace the whole world as my own? There's no bad or good. There is only expanding into the light and contracting away from it. And what the masters do when they resurrect us in terms of the living conditions of our lives is they don't necessarily make it more pleasurable and easier. They make it more expansive for us. And so Mary of Magdala's life, you know, it's easy to say she was a sinner and she was a fallen woman and all of these different things. But what Jesus rescued her from was the unhappy contraction of her own consciousness. Because her own actions repeated out of habit and out of a helpless flow of energy that she couldn't break were making her, were not giving her bliss. Were making her suffer. Even though there would be a time of pleasure and ease, it would always be followed by a deeper suffering. And it wasn't going anywhere, and she was helpless to stop it. And then in relationship to Jesus, he drew her out of it. He recreated her. He gave her a new life. Swamiji used the beautiful phrase when he was talking about Easter and the lesson of Jesus and the power of the guru to uplift it. He says, it's transcendence with a little help. You know? And that's what Mary had experienced. I'm sure she had resolved in herself many times to lift herself away from that which was producing her suffering, but only in the relationship with the one who had himself transcended did the power come into her. So the resurrection is, to a large extent, and this is what we have to understand, it's all about what gives us faith. Jesus made this extraordinarily dramatic demonstration of his power and of his ability to return even from what looked to everyone like the most horrific circumstances in his full glory to those who were able to receive him. And that's why it's so interesting. For 40 days he came back from time to time to visit who knows who and how many times and why and what was said. But he wanted them to deeply, with every part of their being, realize this was not a hallucination, this was not a fluke, this was not just an accident. There wasn't just one person they had to believe. This was a fact. Nothing, heaven, earth, time, space, life, death, humiliation, suffering, disappointment, success, nothing bound him. But the extraordinary thing, and he said this to the disciples so powerfully at the Last Supper, that which I do, ye shall do. I am the vine, you are the branches. If you cling to me, if you're in tune with me, that which I do, ye shall do, and greater things. And what he wants us to understand is that is not just him, that is also us. Now, we don't have records of, we have you know, emerging stories of what happened to Mary of Magdalene after all of this, how she became a very great devotee, a very great missionary for Jesus, how she lived in a great state of happiness. You can't imagine that she didn't, because she had experienced, and here's the part that we really have to remember, she believed her own experience and did not forget it. She came back and told the other disciples, you know, the Lord has been resurrected, and depending on which gospel you read, whether they believed her or not. Peter and John, they say, ran to the tomb to see. And then the tomb at least was empty, but they didn't see him, they say, some versions say, until that night, and then he came and then they believed. But you see, the point here is, whether or not we've seen the resurrected Jesus or the resurrected Yogananda or the resurrected Sri Yukteswar or Krishna on a cloud or whatever it is that our particular inclinations go toward, every one of us, really every day, experiences the endlessly uplifting power and presence of God. And almost all of us have at least one, and usually more, really dramatic moments in which you know that something greater than just my own idea about things came into my life and gave me an experience. The difference between us and Mary of Magdala is that because of those experiences she remembered, and she didn't let subsequent experiences or other people's opinions take her away from that. You know? This story, we repeat it over and over again, and we live through the whole cycle of it, because art is a way of understanding life, because art has beauty, art has feeling, it's not just fact. We were talking yesterday, you know, when Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he prays to the Lord, and he says, Lord, let this cup pass from me. And what he's talking about is the impending crucifixion, and he's praying, what he's praying for is that people will receive his message in their hearts and not reject it. That's what he wants. That's the bitter cup he has to drink, is that he could save them. He could transform their lives, and they're not going to let him do so. Instead, they're going to reject him. That's the bitter cup. But Lord, let this cup pass from me. What a phrase. It's been immortalized in poetry and in music beautifully. But what he really said is, Lord, does this have to happen? You know? That's one way of saying it. But oh, that lacks beauty. That lacks poetry. That lacks the feeling of the heart that gives us power. You know, the masters understand how we're made. So here we have this story of Jesus. Jesus is crucified horribly, and then he is buried in the tomb, and then he rises again. And it's not merely a thrilling metaphysical story. It's great art, isn't it? Swamiji once referred to the story of the life of Christ as the greatest story, the greatest story ever told, which is the common phrase, the most dramatic story, he said. And I said, the most dramatic? I don't know why I said that. I sort of raised a question. And Swamiji looked at me. His eyes were just shining with divine light. And I'll never forget the way he said it. He said, yes, don't you think so? You know, just like that. But it helped me to understand on a very deep level, not only what happened here, but how we can relate to it in such a way that we have the kind of faith that Mary had, so that Mary could be the first one to see Jesus resurrected. She was able to see him because she was there to receive it. You know, he could have been standing there for others, and they wouldn't even have noticed him. There's a story, an autobiography of a yogi, of Sri Yukteswar coming to see his guru, Lahiri Mahashaya. And Lahiri says to him, "Did you see Babaji in the hallway?" And Sri Yukteswar said, "No." And then he goes back and Babaji makes himself clear. And Babaji says he was hiding behind a sunbeam. And Sri Yukteswar's mind was too restless to perceive. So it's not as if the capacity to have these experiences is not equal in all of us. Every one of us made our own bodies, didn't we? I mean, nobody else made it. It was just us. And here we are. And we continue to do it, don't we? The only difference between us and Jesus' capacity to remanifest his completely, it didn't take him any time, he didn't have to start as a baby, is just that he's aware. His consciousness has expanded. And the most glorious thing about this, you see, is all of us have experienced the capacity to expand our consciousness, haven't we? We all are capable of doing things now that we weren't able to do a few years ago or yesterday. Or something like that. You know, you learn to play the piano, you learn to draw, you learn to drive a car, you learn to drive from one place to another, and you know where it is. And the next time you go to it, you don't have to look for it and wonder how to find it. The first time you do something that's a little bit makes you a little nervous, then you do it the second and the third and the fourth. Whether you're making, you know, a cake in your own house or a public presentation or heart surgery or whatever it is, we learn how to do things. We become comfortable. We learn how to express ourselves. We learn how to be more of who we really are. We learn to trust our capacity to love. We learn to stand by our friends. We learn to believe that our friends will stand by us. All of this is an expansion of our capacity and our consciousness. Have you discovered yet in your life where the end of that is? Sometimes we arbitrarily say the end of that is one incarnation. But my, we seem to come back again, don't we? And then we have stories like this of Jesus and other masters who even in the same body come back. Is there any end to it? Are we not on the same road? And the only question is, why was Mary able to see him? And how can I be like her? This is all that Jesus is asking of us. Yes, it's glorious art to relive this story over and over again. And it deeply awakens our feelings, and that in itself helps to increase our faith. When we experience this deep, not merely as an intellectual idea, but as something that permeates through us, that helps us to know truth from error. That gives us the bliss that is the guiding force that takes us through our whole life. But there's only one real purpose behind this story. That purpose is to build within us an understanding of who Jesus was in relationship to us. In relationship to us is the example of what we will become. And the necessity for us to walk that path with courage, with joy, with true attention, until our faith becomes as Mary's faith. If you were here, Lord, it would have been completely different. So that we can just know that, Lord, wherever I am right now, if you come here, it will be completely different. And that's not good or bad. That's suffering versus bliss. And bliss is the only goal. God bless you.